Remember Gazoo from the Flintstones? That's it.
Hey, I love me some Gazoo.
The Little Green Man. And of course, this only could be the supernatural substation. It's moving on down to becoming the substation with the jokes and the stuff here. At any rate, you are listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network and iHeart Radio Partner. Pardon me. In the background, waiting for me to shut the hell up. Pete Haviland and Bernadine LeBlanc. Say hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey guys.
Listen to Pete's got a new headset. He sounds so professional. Professional.
Oh, here we go.
Dog bark because I have nobody supervising this 100-pound animal walking up and down. So she may bark. But the subject matter is gonna be creepy tonight. We are having another Supernatural Substation Investigates, and tonight we are looking into the possession and exorcism of Annalise Michel, which is very famous. But before we do that, I wanted to bring up something, because we talk about our peers in the paranormal community every week. So I happen to be watching Dead Files, which I've been kind of getting into lately. I've missed some of them. And we've talked about Amy Allen and whatever. We've talked about it. But they did, apparently, I think it was new last night, they did a New Orleans one, right? And well, she came down. Remember, Bernadine, you remember we did the investigation in the funeral home on Canal Street?
Yes.
Behind that, in the same block, but on the corner behind the parking lot for the funeral home, is a restaurant. And it used to be years ago, before, like a long time in the mid-20th century, it was a Lutheran church. And then it closed down as a church, and it was bought by local guys. I think it opened as a restaurant in the mid-70s. It was called Christians, and it was popular for a while. And then Katrina hit. The popularity was starting to wane into the 70s. I mean, into the 20s now, 2015. And I think there was actually somebody else in there that Christians had closed before that, but I don't know if they mentioned it. And then Katrina hit and closed it all down. Well, these two guys bought it. These guys owned three other restaurants, and they saw it and bought it sight unseen, you know. So I guess they bought it online or whatever. And it's in mid-city, and there was 8 to 10 feet of floodwaters in that area at the time of Katrina. And the water stayed for two and a half weeks. So two things. I tend to believe Amy Allen is a medium. I know that they exaggerate some of the stuff for the entertainment value, but I do feel like she has psychic powers. And I do kind of think that the guy, Steve, has a lot to put on the line to his reputation as far as a retired cop and everything, to get on TV and, he ain't going to be running around, in other words, saying, I demand you to come on, so he's not going to be doing that. So I've been, looking at it. And she had a terrible time outside of the place. She kept getting like nothing but chaos, chaos, chaos. And, maybe it's because it's in a high crime area. I don't know. Or there's a funeral home right across the street, which, I kept kind of saying to the TV. But she had a really hard time fixing on anything. And she kept saying all she heard was people crying, people screaming, people being moved around, chaos, chaos, chaos. So that kept happening when she was brought in and out. Then inside, well, it comes down to, I knew what she was picking up on. She was picking up on the Katrina residue. We've talked about this, you and I, Bernadine, especially, have talked about the after effect of this, of that hurricane. And it's like, you hear all these people that want to say, oh, but it's gone. The city was under this huge shadow. I mean, this shadow entity, this massive like nuclear cloud of just bad energy. And I've been saying it since it happened. The city is dead. It has nothing but chaos in it. And sure enough, you've got this professed medium, and she's having a hard time. So she kept going in and out. It's not a big place. Okay. So that was kind of like, we actually, now we have somebody who's not in the magic trick bag of New Orleans, you know, so doesn't have a pony in the race to say that, oh, it's all better now. So that was interesting. But listen to this. So they come down to, there's a woman in red who's really angry and she's haunting the place. There's a funeral home across the street, right? Okay, so this is what I kept saying. Okay, this woman is all in red and she's got shadow entities with her and she's angry. Okay, so she's haunting the place. And there's another entity, a guy that is like a trickster who's tripping people, causing accidents, doing, you know, just malevolent, you know, evil, but not, you know, maliciously bad, but could be. Like he could kill somebody if he knocks him down the step. She does a sketch of a guy with black hair, right? Tied back in a queue, typical 1790s, early 1800s, right? And a woman who kind of looked like the picture that it ended up being. This is nowhere near the French Quarter, okay? Not really, geographically. It's not that close. They come up with the Baroness Pontalba, okay? Now, if you've been to New Orleans and you've stood in Jackson Square, there are two apartment buildings that line, that are on either side of the square. They're brick, they have the wrought iron, and they still have the seal of the Baroness Pontalba in them because she built those. But she left the city in like 1840 something and went to Paris and spent most of her life in Paris. But somehow they came up with, she's haunting that restaurant. I'm like, okay. I'm like, y'all had to do this, right? I'm like, come on. And she's really reaching, okay? Amy's reaching to try and stick with that narrative. I'm like, why the hell? This is nowhere near where she spent her life, this woman, the Baroness. You can look it up, Baroness Pontalba. And there was somebody they brought in that had the story of Baroness Pontalba, which is she was small, like an infant when her father died. She inherited, he was an almanaster, and she inherited a shitload of money. And then she died, and she became like the most wealthiest heiress, and she marries her cousin, I can't remember his name. She married him, and then his father wanted the money because he thought it was her dowry. And he literally locked this woman up for 2 years in Paris, hounded her every day of her life, tried to kill her. He took a shot at her when he snapped and tried to kill her. And it did, it somehow it missed her artery by like a micro whatever. And then he shot and killed himself in Paris. Okay. So she's not, why is she haunting this Lutheran church spot, you know, behind the funeral?
Because she's got a name.
This was like where it went. It was like, whoa. And I was like trying to keep this on the rails here. And then he pulls out a picture of the Baron, the father-in-law, okay, and look, nothing like the guy that she had the sketch of. And for the very, I mean, I'm sure it's happened because I've only been watching, paying attention to it for like a few weeks, but for the first time, I'm like, you guys just went so off the freaking rail. They got some historian walking around Cypress Grove Cemetery talking about the woman's life and how it should be made into a movie. Okay, and, you know, maybe there's something there. But once this woman, she was actually related to, and I'm surprised this didn't come up, to Madame Lalaurie. She was an aunt somehow, a cousin or an aunt, through marriage, okay, to her, like on her father's level, like that level of whatever, they were married, in a marriage between cousins. There's a dog. We all have one dog, folks. So you may get to know all their barks tonight. But you know, so that, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't dig her up, and you know, her corpse up. But I'm like, what? I'm like, you know, and so the night we were there, Dean, at the funeral home, there was a lady prepared, and she was in a room, right? And we knew she was there. It was the body, okay? I'm thinking, you know, I mean, how many women in red could there be? How many New Orleans? There could be 1,000, okay, right? I mean, how many people have gone through that funeral home? The stuff with Katrina, she was right on, okay? And she kept complaining about it. And you know, it was a small space anyway, so she had to like make the most of it. But she kept getting.
But
But the stuff with Katrina, though, I mean, that's an easy guess. I mean, everybody knows what happened in New Orleans with Katrina.
Right. Well, I know, right. I mean, she was really legitimately having problems. And that confirms, though, what I've been saying since Katrina, that the city has been, you know, it's a dying corpse right now. And everything is that's on it right now is nothing but maggots eating on the corpse, because that energy has never been satisfied. It's never been washed away. And I have said this, and this is a shame, but they need another storm to hit that actually doesn't take that right turn if they want to clean New Orleans out, quote unquote, magically, because you know how much crap is down here. But well, the spirits, the grave.
That's not going to happen, though. As long as you have place memory, and as long as our psychic selves can tune into what has happened in that
environment,
you're going to pick up just whatever layer upon layer.
We're losing your mic. You're losing your mic. Plug it back in. I'll give you a minute to say something.
Hello?
Yeah, but you're very remote, Pete. It's like the mic's unplugged. He's got a new mic, folks. He's going to figure it out. So, no, let me go on so we're not just sitting here. I agree with you. I understand. But what I'm saying is this is proof of what Dean and I and other people have been hypothesizing for a long time, because I experienced it personally, okay? That and somebody that we know that does tours, Bernadine, but she's got blonde hair and usually...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's clean. Oh, we're getting back from that energy. No, this is clean. And I'm like, yeah, no. Okay, and why do you think you have a crime? And why do you think you have all this insane crap going on in the city? And why are the sewers? Well, that's Beauregard. They tore down a statue and they got flooding for it, and they can flood away. But yeah, there is that chance that there's a storm of the century that comes up and doesn't take that right hand jog and will wipe that city out. You know, I mean, the water that washed the Superdome washed out all the bad juju and everything that was on the Saints, and eventually, I mean, they went to their first Super Bowl victory. Water is powerful, and it was salt water that got into the city. But you know, it's an accident waiting to happen, because it's the same people. Why am I getting? I don't know. His phone went off.
Oh my goodness!
We're gonna have to talk to Joe. Joe.
Yeah, because a friend's telling me right now we have no video and no audio on her end.
Yep. Well, you and I are going to continue to talk, and we'll try and get in touch with Joe. Sorry, folks. We've had this for the last couple of weeks. What's the video? She's watching in YouTube, you mean?
Yeah. There's no video and no audio, she says.
Oh, well, we're down. But I think that we're on, so I don't think. Yeah, it would say live now. I don't know. But I'm going to keep talking about it. I just, you know, I mean, it's for me. It was a validation. Okay, because I do believe the woman has I keep seeing your messages, has abilities.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I watched her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, no sound, no audio. I mean, audio, video. All right,
yeah, y'all live, guys. The only place you're not is on YouTube. YouTube's having some kind of issue. Yeah,
that's where she's at.
Yeah, everything on our end for YouTube's working. It even says great screen health.
Yeah, just write her back and tell her. I don't know why Pete keeps getting dropped.
Yeah, he keeps getting dropped out for some reason. I've been watching him bounce around like a ping pong.
He's the main show tonight, so he needs to come in.
Ain't got nothing to do with us. We're all of our internet, everything's smooth as could be.
Can you call him?
I just did.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll do it again. I tried dragging him in a minute ago, but for some reason, you don't want to let Pete stay in the queue.
Well, crap.
Yeah,
we're alive.
It's probably something between us somewhere in one of the lines, or something to do with the internet somewhere out there. It's unfortunately these days, you know.
Is it 504-273?
He's 504-273-7379.
Yep.
probably getting noise.
I hear a bunch of like air.
Right. Yeah, my AC's on. I'm getting ready to get off the mic. Which
all your stuff.
Yeah, that's in studio. Yeah, that's not so. I don't know why it won't keep back. He bounces back.
Heat.
Yeah, he's going again. The demons are getting him tonight for some reason. I don't know what that's about.
Can you monitor that? He's gonna call. He said okay to call on you in, and then we can.
Yeah, I'm right here. I'll wait for him to call.
All right, because
I have no idea what's going on with YouTube. It is. It just says video unavailable. Nice. Even though when you go to the YouTube page, it says we're live now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey. Got him.
Grabbing.
Live radio.
Slide him in. Okay. What the hell is that about?
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hey, so Joe, it's Scott.
Oh, my goodness.
Let me just tell everybody who comes upon this in, like, future times. It is 90-plus degrees here with 88% humidity, okay? Joe has an AC problem at his house, and he's probably got fans and window units and all kind of stuff going, because this is miserable. Okay, so nobody wants to know. So the noise in the background is every freaking, you know, cooling appliance that the man has. But I'm glad you're back, Pete. Okay, you're there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
I,
cool. All right,
I
good.
Couldn't. I couldn't connect up to y'all with the Bluetooth and stuff.
We hear you good now.
Yeah, you're okay. We first heard was you went shallow, like faint, and then you went off. But now we hear you perfect. I thought
maybe you were just mad at me.
No. No. No.
I thought maybe you might have called up somebody and saying Pete's being persnickety tonight.
No. A lot of people. I'm not going to say I'm not that kind of person, because there has been times in the past I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't cheat you because you're my friend.
I'm just kidding.
The word of the night, persnickety.
Persnickety. Persnickety and
dog.
Yeah,
I pulled that one out.
Dog farts. Yeah, that's going to be. Persnickety. I'm telling you, I don't know, but I got the apple cinnamon glade sitting next to me here.
Yeah, I got the cinnamon Febreze over here too.
You got a Great Dane, Dean's got a hot dog, and I got a Doberman Pinscher on changed food. Okay, recently, so she is a gas fat.
Oh yeah, well, yeah. Then you're gonna have a great night.
One, right? She jumps up on the sofa to look out of the window, and she did just that, and then there was like a that came out of her. Okay, and she turned around and looked, like the look on her face was like, what was that? Did I do that? And then she had to run to get away from it. I'm like, you bitch. And I'm over here, you know, with the air fryer. I'm like, get away. Get away. She comes over. I'm like, yeah, it was you. You just walked into the air spray. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, while we were trying to, when I was trying to get back on the phone with y'all, Zeus just blew one out and looked at me like it was my fault.
It was, yeah. Well, now we know why.
Then put his head back down. I figured, he put his head back down and just, I guess he's done for the night. I don't know.
When my dog does that, she takes off running like something hit her because she don't know what it is.
Exactly. That's what this one did. Like, it was the first time she ever. Now she's trying to get out of the room because of the apple cinnamon. She's got her blanket and she's trying to go lay down. Anyway, folks, it's live radio, three locations. No, you know, Pete, I was just bringing that up because Dean and I have talked about it before. My daughter and I have talked about it and, you know, experiencing it after Katrina. And there's so many people who have a dog in the race because they either run tours or they run something else. No, it's fine. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's really not fine. It's like a sick, mm-hmm. it's like a sick person. It's like, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised. You know, if like Amy Allen is not part of the quote unquote magical community of New Orleans and she's picking up on crap, you know, if I was a medium from somewhere else having to open up here, I'd freak out too, you know, because she was just picking up on everything. As it turned out, what happened with the Katrina stuff specifically, she was picking up on the general chaos, but when the water went down there, and people started coming back to the neighborhood, the church, that location was like a gathering place for people. Like, they handed out food. People, you know, mingled there in the neighborhood, you know, and they came there. You know, so she was picking up on, you know, all of that, and people losing so much. And, you know, I mean, people lost their homes, their houses and whatever. But, you know, she was picking up all of it. And the reason I wanted to bring it up, being from New Orleans, is that it's so true. That is what it feels like now. That is why I have that and the crime, which I think is all part of the same problem. You know, it's just out of control. Plus, in the real world problem, they don't know how to run this city. You know, I am even going to go into politics, you know, but it's like, no, you know, they keep electing the same people thinking something's going to get done. Right. And that's the definition for insanity. And so that there's that problem, and that's practical and material. There's the other issue of it's not the same city. And I tell people this all the time. You know, it's not a safe place for those reasons, the psychic reason, or, you know, the ethereal reason and the material reason of what's, you know, going on. And it's like a symbiotic relationship feeding off of that. So it was nice to see, I guess, an outsider having a problem with that, you know, trying to find the thread. You know, through all of that mess. So, you know, for me, it was like a validation.
Well, let me ask you this. I remember quite a long time ago, we discussed something about a minister or a preacher or something had a helicopter, and he was going to be dumping a whole bunch of holy water over New Orleans to try to change the energy out there.
I don't think you were talking. I don't think it was you.
I'm
and
sorry?
I don't think you and I were talking about that.
Okay, well, maybe it wasn't, but I had read something about that. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if was there any follow up with that? Did they ever say anything? Did anybody ever feel anything different or notice anything different other than just the original story?
Yeah, I don't know. I can look up into it and find out. I didn't hear that. I'm sure that happened a lot, not from helicopters, but from, you know, people, priests going home to home and stuff like this. It's just that, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, we dodged a bullet, we missed it, you know, and it went to Mississippi or whatever. But it really did kill the city. And it was devastating in a lot of ways. There are anyone who grew up in New Orleans, who is an old line family, you know, who's been here for years, can tell you of the things that we lost just in the way of, you know, restaurants and landmarks and all of a sudden, you know, and now they want to tear more down, you know, and that's just itty. Anyway, but anyone can tell you there's a total and entire complete difference between what it was even in 2005. And that wasn't very good. Okay. I mean, it was the crime was approaching Chicago levels, which it did after Katrina. It's just that when Katrina came through, it was the mother of all storms, and it was almost with precision cuts where it gutted like the Ninth Ward. Okay. People often talk about the Ninth Ward, and we're going to go on to Annalise in a minute, but the Ninth Ward was wiped out. It was because it's along the Industrial Canal there and the locks that lead down toward the Missigo and Chalmette and all that. And it was wiped out. And what lived in that community were those families that have been here for years and years and years. Six and seven generations of families, mostly Black, okay, who were families that gave people that were part of the character of the city, you know, right alongside the New Orleans Yachts. These were the same kind of people. These were the people who understood, you know, they weren't racist. They didn't hate white people. They, it was what made New Orleans tolerant and diverse. And it was that relationship between everyone, you know, and that was ripped apart. And most of those families went to live in other cities because their houses literally were gone. And some of those who may have rented or ran businesses, that was gone too. I mean, if you go down there, it's just, it's blighted and it's desolate, but there's nothing you can really do about it. So people don't understand it unless they're standing on from the, looking at it from the inside, how much was displaced and wiped away. And it really did expose, I've always thought of her as a female, as a mother. And I talk about it in the beginning of my book, Haunting Tales. I talk about how she's a mother to her children, that she, that we have had a special relationship with New Orleans that's almost unlike any other city. She's like a continental lady, someone from Europe. She's from the golden days, you know, and you had that relationship, whether it was you were born in 1960 or you were born in 1980, you had that feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, that relationship with your city as a living sentient being, and she died. And she died in Katrina. And all it is now is a corpse. And what it's going to turn into is going to be the same as any other city. That gentrified, hipster, move in for a few years, move out, all these national problems becoming, you know, our problems, commonplace, tearing stuff down. It's just she's gone, okay, and she's gonna become, she's just a corpse now. Hear who? Me?
Oh, sorry, I'm trying to bring up
don't do that
for my friend. Like, we got it.
Who are you talking to?
Live.
Can we hear Annalise? Okay. But anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't want to carry on so much. It was just those two things. It was like anybody that may have watched the episode, it's a big stretch to say that that's a Baroness Pontalba haunting that place, you know, behind Jane's funeral home off of Canal Street. That is a big stretch, okay? And that's the first time I actually saw him reek. It was kind of obvious. But on the other side of the coin, her challenges that she was having were confirming what we've been saying forever, you know, that, yeah, the city is dead. There's nothing but chaos down there. And
like it's diseased all of a sudden from Katrina, you know.
It's a corpse. That's what it is. And everything they do.
Used to be quarantined.
And nothing they do is successful. And it's, it's weird, but not unexpected. They can't, I mean, from people who can't manage a cat litter box, you know, I mean, it's like, I wouldn't have them cleaning out my cat box, these people, but, you
we
know.
We need to have the city exercised.
Yeah, or another storm. They literally come out and really wipe
wash
it out.
Wash it out, yeah.
You know, but then that's gone, you know. I mean, but New Orleans, as I knew it growing up, and I'm sure that there's so many other people who would say, as I knew it growing up and who came after me or before me, it's no more. It ended that in 2005. And so what you see now is just a caricature of what it used to be. But anyway, I want to move on to our topic tonight. And so Pete's been looking into the infamous case of Annalise Michel. Anyone that knows it, I'm going to turn it over to you, Pete, in a minute. But anyone that knows it knows, at the very least, it's infamous. It is the basis for the movie The Exorcism of Emily Rose. But for other, there were a couple of other movies as well. I have pulled up the some audio, which I can play at the appropriate time for some of the talking that she did. But I'm gonna let you, let's go look into the case from start to finish and see what we find. So Pete, take us away.
Okay. Well, I honestly really don't remember where it had happened at. All I know is that. Sorry. Go ahead. Hello.
Hey, you there, Arlene?
Here. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I have some notes. I mean, I can just go through just some of the stuff, like where it started and all that other stuff.
She was German.
Yeah, okay. So I wrote this, I was writing this down. Annalise Michel was born in West Germany. I didn't write the town down, but she was born in a Bavarian town in that area, Bavaria, West Germany, in 1960, 50 something. didn't write good notes, y'all. I'm sorry. No, seriously.
1952.
Okay, thank you, because I'm looking down at the date when everything. She was born into a devoutly Roman Catholic family. She had sisters and parents who were devout Roman Catholics. And Pete's saying he got dumped again. Call back in, Pete.
Oh, my goodness.
Call back in. Let me tell him, call back. What? Something doesn't want us.
Yeah, that's what happens when we talk about exorcism. You notice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something.
Our demons.
Well, yeah. Okay. I told him just call back in. Skype should put you back in.
I have her. The Wikipedia of her.
Yeah, I pulled that up too. I wrote down some notes. I'm going to have to just message Joe. Anyway, she was 16 years old in 1968, in September 1968, when she had the first episode of losing conscious. Pete, you're back. Can you hear us?
Yes, I am.
That's
all
you
got
to do. If you drop, just call that number and it'll add you right back in.
Okay.
I'm just going, yeah, and I'm still going over okay. just the episodes.
Okay.
So in September 68, sure. She was 16 years old, and she had the first episode of losing consciousness, passing out. And then she had the experience of something, of sleep paralysis with something holding her down on her chest. In August of 69, she had the second event similar to that, and the family took her to the family doctor, who also brought in a neurologist, and she was diagnosed as possibly having seizures. 69, between 69 and 72, there were two additional episodes, bad episodes, and, excuse me. And the doctors had finally decided to prescribe medications, an anticonvulsant and an anti-seizure. And they did electroencephalograms, and they were cleared as normal. They had some marks, some hits, but they weren't anything like would be expected. You know, she was having psychotic issues or she was epileptic at that time. I mean, they were cleared as normal because there were no hits. In 1973, she starts hearing phenomena. Hears knocking that her sisters also heard, and other people heard. And then she also began to hear a voice damning her to hell. She began to hear audio, like, you know, clairaudience, where she was hearing the voice of a demon telling her that she was damned to hell. And she, in response to this, naturally a devout Roman Catholic will turn to their faith. So she would say the rosary, or she would, you know, kneel in front of icons, she'd kneel in front of the statues. And her mother witnessed her kneeling in front of the statue of the Virgin, and she said that her daughter's eyes turned completely black, not just the pupils, just the black, and that when she interrupted her, or she went to, you know, like grab her or whatever, she noticed that her hands had actually turned into what looked like claws, paws with claws, basically, which was probably the manifestation over her hands. But the way they describe it, you know, it's like she actually saw, you know, animal-like paws with claws on the end of it. Same year, 73, she described seeing demonic faces. And then the first time she began to feel that the devil was inside her. The smells began too, and everybody had smells. There were smells of drains, feces, burning feces. And they took her back to the neurologist, the family said he advised them to consult the church. He denied it later, but he probably did. So they both went and they searched for a priest. The diagnosis, however, she went to see a Freudian psychiatrist in the meantime. So they didn't stop the route of, you know, medical. He diagnosed her as neurotic with possible epilepsy or epileptic patterns. And then they began to give her more medicines. Her bizarre behavior after she was diagnosed, I guess, as epileptic pattern, she began to manifest even more bizarre behavior, like the eating of bugs, She had extraordinary strength. She is said to have squeezed an apple to mush and squeezed it in her hand and made it explode in the house. The priest that they found, one priest, actually two, they were hesitant at first, and they told them to continue the medical treatments. But then in November of 1975, after they approached them, the first exorcism was performed. And that's as far as I got before I began to notice in the audio that I was listening to some extraordinary things that she said, which I'll talk about later, but I'll pick it up. I'll let you pick it up there, Pete.
Well, she was diagnosed with temporal lobe epilepsy, which causes hallucinations, causes disfigurements and of the joints and the hands. I mean, she would move into different positions, like arching her back and things like that. So, I mean, that's all part of what she was diagnosed with. The hallucinations and things, being of a Catholic background, as she was, as well as the family was too, really kind of fed into the hallucinations she was dealing with. And I really think at a certain point in time, she stopped taking medications. So, I mean, she wasn't taking the medication all of the time.
Right.
So,
right. Closer to the end, she actually stopped.
Well, yeah, because she felt that she wanted to try to make whatever she thought was going on, make herself an example to other folks for her strength of religion. So that's why she stopped. Now, one of the things the family did too, when she was in the weakened state, because she stopped eating at one point, and they would help her pray, and they would help her to kneel and to stand up. And her family was also causing a lot of damage to her as well, because she couldn't even hold herself up. And her knees were damaged because of her wanting to pray, which is fine. I mean, I'm not saying that she shouldn't, but my thoughts are is that she should have kept up with her medication if she wanted to go and seek an exorcism. I really thought that she would have survived that if she kept up with both sides. I understand, temporal lobe epilepsy wasn't as researched as it is now. So I'm sure the medications kind of sucked, but it was at least something better than what was happening with her. All these contortions and things that she was going through is all part of the temporal lobe epilepsy as well. So I can see how a religious family would see that being demonic. Now the spells that you're talking of, and a sickened state as she was, and I don't know how well they kept up with her cleanliness, but I mean, I'm sure that probably had something to do with it as well. And if you're in a state of being, of thinking that she's possessed, and she very well could have been, I'm not saying that that's not a possibility, but you just kind of all of that kind of feeds into the mania. Now, I really think that the family really didn't do her justice by not pursuing other avenues to get her at least stable and healthy.
Right.
It just seemed like as she started declining, I mean, they went into panic mode, which, I can understand. If my daughter was doing that, I guess, you would want to try anything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same point, if she's not getting any better, and what's going – and because the exorcism didn't help her either.
Mm-hmm.
She died. The exorcism didn't help her either. So I'm not saying the ritual doesn't help folks, because the ritual does help folks. But I just think it's a shame. I think that woman suffered for no reason at all, to be honest with you.
I agree with you that the medication might have helped her, you know, continue, and probably would have helped her better with the, you know, with going through the exorcism.
Yeah, I really think she could have pulled out of it if they were true to, you know, if they were going to do the religious angle as well as the medicinal angle, I really think she could have pulled out of that.
Well,
it was the time when they stopped the medication is when she sealed her faith. Now,
well,
on a religious side,
Hang on, Pete. I was going to say that, and I agree with you, and she stopped eating, because I read in one account that a doctor, you know, post-mortem said that up to within a week before she died.
Of starvation.
Right. If they would have put her into the hospital or had her at home and put an IV in to feed her and give her the hydration she needed, she wouldn't have succumbed like she did during the exorcism. So that's
well, you
true.
Know what really gets me too is that, you know, the mother and the father and the two priests were arrested and they faced trial. And the judge gave them time served because he felt that that he couldn't give them any more than what they were suffering through right now, to know that they basically killed that girl. But I don't know. I mean, putting them in a jail cell, it's not going to bring her back. But you know, but you still have to make an example. To the community of what should be done versus what shouldn't be done.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got off right, and I don't honestly believe that they were trying to hurt her, but ultimately they did.
67
you know,
exorcisms is a lot.
67 exorcisms, sometimes 2 or 3 a week, is what I read. I know what did change this particular case really changed the Catholic Church's view. They were already cagey about exorcism, okay, but that changed
because that was horrible. That was absolutely horrible.
Well, you know,
I'm just real passionate about that. I just feel so bad. I just feel so bad for the woman.
She went through a lot. They declined. They wouldn't pursue it initially. In defense of them, they insisted that they continue the medical treatment. Okay, but from the Catholic's point of view, if you think from the mindset of a devout Catholic, and this is pre-Vatican II Catholics, the parents are pre-Vatican II. Okay. There are cases of ecstasies. There is such a thing as divine ecstasy. We had ecstatic saints, Saint Teresa of Avila, Saint Catherine of Siena, Saint Anthony, Saint Benedict, that go into the ecstatic state of interacting directly with Christ. And, you know, so that is well known. And that is an experience that they would have known of. Okay. And I think in the movie Emily Rose, they do hit on this, the faith itself, that they, when she said she didn't want to be fed or anything, they left her, it left it in the hands of God. And it was the faith itself that was informing them to do that. That was the test of their own faith. In faith that, you know, they're going to leave it to God. And so that doesn't exonerate anybody, but that's the mindset.
I can understand the mindset, but at what point is it sickness or the mania of what is going on that they would think that the faith is pushing them to do that.
Is they're that devout at no point were they going to give that up, because they were devout in their faith, and they even saw her death as the will of God.
Well,
so
part of her death, though, at the very end, if you remember, I don't know if you watched the show, but at the very end, she said she was visited by the Virgin Mary and was given the choice to be freed of the demons or save souls. You know, I kind of believe, you know, if a person is in that state and you know, the Virgin Mary comes to them and tells them that, you know, if she can either stay there or she can go back and, you know, face more demons and go through the suffering to show people that demons do exist.
Right, right. And that's in the movie. But that's
still the hallucination, though, from the temporal lobe epilepsy.
But if it's not.
In real life. Well, I'm gonna take you to the spiritual side in a minute because I've got her voice, I've got some of the tapes on, and then I'm gonna tell you what she's saying, okay? But in her life, okay, she may have been influenced, but she was the one who told her parents and the priest that she wanted to suffer. Now, they don't mention the visitation of anything. She was the one who said that she wanted to offer up her suffering for the people who did not believe in God. Now, okay, this again.
But at some point in time, you have to take responsibility over the person that is ill and make the decision for them that makes the most sense. She was not in her right mind. She was under hallucination. She was not in her right mind.
Possession
her parents
is
should have
not
made that
a
decision
diagnosis.
For her. But it's still to say that it's possession. It's possession, you still have to go through everything. You have to still go through a list to see what everything is before you even think it's possession.
They had 1, 2, 3, 4 two psychiatrists, a neurologist, and another physician, okay, working on her continuously while they were working on her continuously. Yes, they were.
They were not working on her continuously.
Up until the year of the first exorcism, up until 1973. Until 1975, the last physician she saw was a psychiatrist who diagnosed her. And that supports what you say as an epileptic. Okay, that was the diagnosis of the Freudian. She had epileptic patterns. She was neurotic with epileptic.
But epilepsy and temporal lobe epilepsy are two different things.
They went for three different opinions. Okay, and all of them, and even the two priests, when they first went to the priest, said keep her on her medicines, because they know. They knew what they had to prove in order to get
which they did not do. She stopped taking her medication.
Not arguing.
Now, come on,
okay?
We just talked about that.
A discussion. I'm saying I
this
was
is
about
a discussion.
To say, I was about to say. I thought you meant the priest. Okay, I know that the parents went along with her when she got off of her medication, but I'm not. An argument unless we tone it down. Okay. I'm not arguing with you. I'm saying mental illness is a factor in that. Okay. And they did. They dropped the ball on this child. Okay. They really did. Now, you know, I mean, if it was me, everything impossible medical would have been done under any circumstance. And, you know, and I believe in everything supernatural and I believe my Catholic faith, but I'd have her in a hospital and everything. I understand. These are different people. This is a different culture. This is a different church.
I understand that. I understand that. I just feel terribly again for the woman because she suffered greatly and she didn't have to, her parents did not do everything that they should have for her. She should have been in a facility.
Okay.
She should have been watched 24 hours a day.
We've established that. Okay, now let's move on to the reality of possession. Do you believe in demonic possession? Do you believe in the ability and of the supernatural to invade and for the demonic to invade the personality, to subdue the nascent personality and take residence inside a human, spiritually possess them?
If all else fails, yes. I've seen things like you've seen things.
So you believe in it then? Right. So
at a last resort, if nothing else is showing up, yes. I'm actually a very religious person. I don't talk about it that much.
I know, okay, but I'm saying I understand 100% where you're coming from. Okay, they dropped the medical ball, but there is very clearly a case to be made that she was in fact demonically possessed. She could be an epileptic and be demonically possessed at the same time. Okay, it could be that's triggering her epilepsy.
I understand that, but my opinion still stands. My opinion still stands. You're not going to change me on that.
That's what I said. We've established that they failed her. Okay, so we need to we've established that. Okay, what I'm saying is the two can coincide illness. So okay, so they failed her, and they also took her at her own word. Okay, and that was what I was
trying to explain. They shouldn't have
because of their Catholic faith. They did because of their faith. Their belief in something supernatural, okay? They didn't because of that. Okay, so you don't know what went on between the parents, the other
children. No, we don't. No, this is our opinions. We weren't in the room. I understand that too.
Well, this is what we can say from all the available evidence that we had. We weren't the doctors who looked at her. We weren't the parents. We weren't the priests who did this, okay? I'm just talking about the state of possession. You can be, you can have cancer and a demon can possess you. You can be perfectly healthy and a demon can possess you, or more demons or whatever. And it can be mistaken as religious ecstasy or mental illness. Dean can testify to that. You worked in institutions with these people. A lot of those people in there are possessed, are attached, are being oppressed by supernatural entities, not always demons, but they're being attached, okay, or they're being oppressed. There's that a lot of them are. And what these spirits do, they suppress the personality. Schizophrenia, okay, it's you know, we all know what schizophrenia is, but in a lot of those cases where it came out of nowhere and there's maybe some remote ancestor went crazy once, then you have to start looking at a supernatural explanation. These people were not intelligent enough. It seems to me that they were just not intelligent enough to handle it properly, even if it wasn't a demonic possession, even if it was just epilepsy, okay? I think that they would take out the whole demonic element. She was possessed. She was sick. She probably would have perished anyway because they don't seem to have the basic intelligence that was necessary. But these are people.
Well, unfortunately, this happened back in the late 60s, early 70s. And if it would have happened these days, they would have probably been able to pinpoint it a whole heck of a lot more than they could have there. And that's just sad.
But Bernadine, it happens these days, and people don't pinpoint it, and people miss it entirely. And there's no mental history, right?
Right. So they get their face eaten off. Speaking of eating, she
what?
Until they get their face eaten off. I was thinking of a news.
How the hell did that happen?
I was thinking of a news thing.
I mean, it just came out of the blue. Face eaten off. Like, what the hell?
Yeah,
you know, the guys on bath salts. They get on bath salts and they become zombies, and they, you know.
People say they're zombies, but they're actually on bath salts.
And okay, I remember. I think I remember what you're talking. I remember that now. Yeah, okay.
They kind of go around eating on people, you know, like
I remember the story now.
I remember. Well, in the story here, she began to eat flies, spiders, and coal, and bit off the head of a dead bird. I don't remember that in the movie, but it says it in the article. And in one instance, she crawled under the table and barked like a dog for 2 days. So, yeah, they said that, you know, even the family shouldn't have let her stay under the table for 2 days and bark like a dog.
Right, right. And I agree 100%. 100% with that.
But she wouldn't eat food.
That just doesn't make sense, though.
She ate all these other things.
Yeah, that's, I don't know how to answer that.
If I saw somebody doing that. No, in the movie, there's a question. Yeah. The prosecutor asks a question. And I'm sorry, folks. This is live radio. I'm out in my kitchen. I'm sorry. Yeah. And it's echoing. even in the movie, the guy says, well, if you saw somebody on a street corner eating a bunch of bugs and stuff, wouldn't you think that that person was crazy and do something about it? And she was asked, they were asking the father. And he said, yeah, you know. And so it's like, well, you know, why did you think she was possessed instead of crazy? But there were mitigating factors, or at least contributing factors for them to make their decision. But you're right. Under the table for 2 days, barking.
Yeah, see, that just nerve, doesn't make sense
okay?
to me.
I mean, I'm not going to be afraid of that. I'm going to take that thing from out of, and you shut up, okay? You can't go bark in my house for 2 days. But when you listen to, I found a recording. There's several of them on YouTube. So anybody that wants to go.
Yeah, you got to watch out for some of those, though. Some of them are false.
Well, a couple of them, maybe, but there are.
I'm not saying all of them are. I'm just saying some of them.
I pulled up one that I actually had not listened to before. And I'm going to play just a little bit of it.
Is it the one that's in the German? Because I think that was
German.
One of the real ones.
Yeah, it's in German and it has the subtitles. And I'm going to let you just to hear what we're talking about in the way of supernatural. Okay, so I'm going to hold this to my microphone because I don't have a way to hook it up. So let's go. Okay, so don't listen to that with the lights off at any time. It sounds like it won't bother you, but it does.
No.
What she's saying, okay, this is the one in German, and they do have subtitles. And what caught me, I was just looking for something just to do that, for us to play in the background so we could, you know, people could have a little idea of how bad it was. And I noticed in the translation, right there, she's talking about priests getting married. Okay, she's talking about priests getting married and they can't serve the church. Okay, some of it you could say, well, it's just her Catholic upbringing that's making her say something in a funny voice. Okay, not a lot, because she's what I heard her talk about and what I saw translated. She talked about the falling away of the modern
it's
church.
Just her Catholic upbringing that's making her say something
priest.
In a funny voice.
She talked about
not a lot.
Of the communion rails.
Because
she talked about the turning to face the audience. In other words, doing none of this had reached Bavaria. Okay, she talked about wanting to die for the sins or make her die for the sins. Then she even talks about this, how much they, talking to the priests, want to see the Eucharist delivered to the hands. Yes, I assure you, the demon says. And she says the communion rails must go back in, okay, because they were taking them down. Okay, she had not experienced this. She was housebound. She had not experienced any of the changes. Okay, it began to change when I was in elementary school in the 60s and the late 60s and into the 70s. We began to change, but it was not until the end of the 70s, the 80s, where we began to, I think even after that, where it became normal to receive the Eucharist in the hand. And if you take it out of context to people who are trying right now to save the church, okay, the pre-Vatican II traditionalists who are trying to save this church, save the Roman Catholic Church, or clear out the apostasy. That is one of the main things that these apostates wanted to accomplish, was to take the host in the human hand and touch it, because that desanctifies it. That denies the holy presence, the presence of Christ in the host, and it puts it in your hand. It used to be that when you knelt down at the rail, when I was little, when I got First Communion, you knelt down at the communion rail. They held the metal, the platen or the paten underneath your chin, and the priest put that thing on your tongue. And the only reason he could touch it is that when he was ordained, his hands touch the Holy Chrism. He was ordained as a priest. So that even these bastard, these pedophile monsters that are in there today, my daughter saw a report about visions that were not connected to any of this, but visions that of saints that had said that in purgatory, okay, now we're in a Catholic concept, priest, Pete, so just follow me here. In purgatory,
I'm listening, I'm not saying anything.
These hellish priests, their hands are on fire, burning all the time because they touched the chrism and their hands were holy and they did these evil deeds that they're doing. Okay, so what I am seeing, and I'm flat, and I haven't even listened to the whole translation. This girl, or this,
at some point, she started talking about Hitler and things like that.
She talked about that. Okay, but that was the past. She's talking about stuff that's happening now in the church. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. These demons were talking about how much they.
No, wanted. I understand. What you're saying.
And the demons, she is saying, as the demon, these people are stupid. These stupid people. But let them have it. In one voice, she's saying they're stupid and they don't know it, but they're laughing because they can take. They'll take them. That right there, just shocked me. It just perked me up so much because I was like, how? I mean, this is exactly what we're going through in the church. Because one of these investigations, we're going to need to look into the Catholic Church. So get ready for that one. That one's coming. But it's exactly what is being, the traditionalists are screaming and hollering for us to go away from. But people are going to traditionalist Latin masses. They're leaving the church to go to these to the traditionalist churches, okay? Where none of this, you don't touch the host, you don't even, you wear a sacrament. You know, I mean, I'm talking old Catholicism, because what we have now is apostasy. There's a heretic in the papal seat. This man is evil, and the evil comes from the top down. These priests are all pedophiles. They're all homosexuals. They're all, you know, perverting every doctrine of the church, and they're destroying the church from within. Okay, this is a girl who died in 1975, who for the last at least 5-6 years of her life didn't leave her freaking house. Okay, her mother's not going to sit there and tell, you know what I heard, they're going to start taking the host in the hand. That did not happen, and yet the demons are talking through her about, well,
how
what
do you know that that didn't happen though?
It didn't happen.
How do you know that didn't happen?
These are people
how do you know that it didn't happen?
Because I'll tell you your own. They let her sit under a table and bark, okay, for 2 days.
That doesn't have anything. That doesn't tie into what you're saying. All that ties into is that they couldn't take care of her.
Possible way that they, right, they couldn't get her out from under a table or feed her, but they're gonna sit.
Yeah, but how do you know that the conversation didn't happen? You don't know that. But you don't know that conversation didn't happen. You don't know that that conversation didn't happen with the priest there.
That I am telling you what she is saying. Well, and I'm going to verify. You know how I'm going to verify? Because I'm going to go look back at when the catechism and everything changed. Okay, and then I'll know. Because I don't believe that they were even talking about that. And I lived through 1975. I was in high school. It wasn't happening. Every Friday when we went to Mass, it wasn't happening. Okay.
You know, these days they give you a choice in the Catholic Church. Because when I've been to church, like people in line, you know, to get the host, if they open their mouth, the priest puts it on their tongue.
They
hold their hand out, they put it in their hand.
There's always been a choice. You've always had that choice, but a lot of people didn't think that. And a lot of people do the hand because they don't want the fingers, because they don't want to get sick. Let me tell you, I took my kid to catechism. My brother would sit in church while the other one was in catechism, and the other two were in catechism. And he'd look, and he'd say, don't shake that man's hand. He's been coughing. He's got a cold. Don't shake it. He was scoping it out, okay? Do you think that there was any way that he wasn't going to let that thing be put in his hand at this priest, you know, who had some shaky old drooling guy ahead of him, and he's going to put – that was not going to happen. And everybody said, yeah, the drinking from the cup. Okay, that's all part of the same thing. Those changes may have been emotion somewhere, but they were not part and parcel of the Catholic Church. And these people were traditionalist Catholics. Okay, so I can't say 100%. I can say 99%. Okay, I am shocked because I've listened to the growling and things before, seen it translated and seen the words that this child is saying, and know that I'm hearing these exact problems. These are the problems that the church is facing today. I'm flabbergasted. People, you know, I mean, she's buried, and people do go to her gravesite, and
she was made a saint.
Is she? I don't think she was.
I think she was made a saint.
I don't think so. Maybe. I don't know. But she might be in the first level of like canonization. Maybe. I don't know. I think she should be from a strictly religious point of view. This girl suffered. Okay. Yes. You know, the lack of medical care and stupidity played into it, but she suffered tremendously. And she said and revealed things in her suffering that are important to the faithful of this world today. So, you know, that's where I am. I mean, we can going to continue with her actual story in a minute, but I'm like, you know, I'm ready to send out, I'm sending out emails, you know, I'm going to church militant with this because I don't believe that they've ever covered it. This child predicted things that are destroying our church today. Okay. But so off the soapbox. Okay. So she dies. They do 67 exorcisms in a year and a half on her. She dies. And then they bury her and then they have the trial, right? Am I right, Pete? That's how it goes. They charge the parents. They charge the parents with manslaughter. Was it manslaughter? They wanted to charge negligent homicide, but they charged the two priests, Alt and the other guy, I think Lenz or something was his last name, and her parents with manslaughter. And then it went to trial, right?
Yeah, I think it was involuntary manslaughter.
So what was the result of the trial? Because you said they got
The result was they did. It was time served basically because the judge thought that that he couldn't place anything any more on them than what they've already suffered through losing the child and them being held responsible for it. He held the priest and the parents responsible for her death.
Mm-hmm. And then, but let him go. Somebody got they got probation.
Yes.
Who was it? The priest got probation.
I think so. I think it was something like that. Yeah. I think it was probation and counseling or something. I can't remember.
And then the next weird thing that happens is that they had buried her. And then like 2 years after the trial and everything was, you know, they exhumed her. Because
there was something. Wasn't there something about that they didn't think that she should be in consecrated ground because of the what had gone through with her? And
what I read,
and then had a vision that Annalise's body was still intact,
and it wasn't when they dug it up. But they didn't. That's not why. At least the article I read, the parents said that she had been buried hurriedly, in other words, just
in a cheap coffin,
right? And that they wanted to
she wasn't prepared properly,
that I guess that they could afford, I guess they had saved up or whatever, that they could afford to put her in a better coffin. So they appealed to whoever the authority was to have her exhumed, and everything was done proper and all that, and she was moved out of that coffin into a one that is I don't know if it was metal, but I know it was lined with metal, in a better coffin. So, and they inspected her corpse, and it was natural, appropriate deterioration is what they called it, appropriate to be in. So there was nothing about, you know, the what is it called? The name escapes me. Incorruptible. There was nothing incorruptible about her. So, and then they put, you know, they also put a headstone. So, I mean, that's
unofficial saint. I just read it.
She's an unofficial saint.
Over 30 years later.
That's like one step. And they need to listen to hours and hours of the actual, whatever, whoever has the archives of those tapes. They need to listen through every bit of it, because I think she should be beatified. I mean, she would have to be performing. It's just so long. They'd have to have miracles attributed to her and all that. And it probably will happen. But anyway, so that was, you know, the next weird thing is that the girl's body, can't let her rest in peace. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's just her shell, you know. But I guess the parents felt better, you know, they would feel better if they put her in a better coffin or whatever. So, you know, to me, that's, I don't, you know, it's like violating her grave to me. I'm just not a person that's for, unless it's for like murder, you know, or something, they're going to test the body. I'm just like, leave them where they are. But, you know, and so now her gravesite is a pilgrimage place, which is now, which naturally was going to happen because of the nature of it. And I don't know if the priests are even alive still that did it. But this case, and probably all the attention that went to the case that actually was the exorcist, it just forced the church to look at the ritual. And so that went on. And Pope Paul, I guess, was, until 1978, Pope John Paul came in, and he was the one that changed the ritual Romanum, to bringing it up from the 1614 version. He brought it up to date with some changes. But then Pope Benedict, who was traditionalist, okay, he changed it back. So now actually the original ritual is set back, and there is education within the church, unless this lunatic pope that we have now decides to stop it. There is more training and education to do with the rite of exorcism and rendering the rite, and who, and so we actually have an increase in exorcists in answer to, you know, the complete decay, the continuing decay of our world. Now we have an increase in exorcists, as oddly enough, you know, so it went from being, from tamping them down to saying, well, we need to look at this because this is real. There is temporal authority, and then there's spiritual authority. And the church, the faith is built on supernatural. It's the supernatural, the belief in a supernatural, extra natural being, Christ, who is supernal to all, whatever. And so he tells us in his word, he casts out demons. He himself casts them out. And he tells us that these things are real, and this is the doctrine of the church. They are real. And we've seen it so many times. Okay, we've seen it. I don't need to be in the room with Annalise Michel to know that demonic possession happens. I didn't need to see what's his name that they did the Exorcist movie over to know that that's, I'm told by Christ, you know, that it happens. He met a boy. A boy came to him who was possessed by legion, and he sent them into a herd of pigs, and they threw themselves off a cliff. Okay, I'm a Catholic. I believe in him, and I believe that that was the truth. Okay, and as it turns out, it's helped people. But this is a particularly grisly case. It would have been better, and I agree with you, Pete, it would have been better if they would have kept up her health, because if they were keeping up with her health, and if they were rendering, you know, all medical care that they could, and despite that, this crap still kept going on, then, you know, it kind of supports.
That's
the
what
whole
I stated in the beginning. That's what I stated in the beginning.
And I agree with you in the beginning. And I'm not making an excuse for the stupidity went on. I just tried to put it into context of the concept of the way the people were thinking, you know, as devout religious Catholics. And they haven't been portrayed as anything else since then, not in the movie or another. So we know that they were very devout Catholics, and unique in Bavaria, I would think, where everybody's probably a Lutheran, you know, or secretly worships Hitler or something, you know. But I guess I'm going to have to go back and hear what she said about Hitler, because that would be very interesting indeed. And it might be suppressed. Because it seems like these demons have no problem. People say that, you know, that the demons lie, that these evil spirits lie. And that is not true, okay? The devil, quote unquote, whoever you may think it is, evil, the principle of evil alive in the world, knows what's going to happen to you in the future, just like, let's say, God does, okay? They know the future. They even know when they're going to end and all this. They know more than we know about the future. They can tell you the truth up to a certain point. So the veracity of what she's saying, what these things are saying through her, is, I'm satisfied that, you know, that they were definitely talking about a future time when this was going to happen to the church, okay, which even casts it in more of a more of a sort of religious ecstasy type thing. Okay. So they tell you, the people say, you know, the devil's a liar. Actually, the way he gets you, or the way he quote unquote would get you, is by telling you the truth. You know, it's true, this or that, it's true. And then tell you that you can avoid that, or you can change that, or, you know, and that's where the idle hands come in, and the duplicity of evil, you know. So finally she's at rest, and her grave is now a pilgrimage site, you know, and I guess everybody has to make up their mind on what they believe about the case.
I didn't know that she was bearing stigmata. I hadn't seen that in the movie.
Oh, that's another thing. Well, yeah, it was in the movie.
Okay. Remember? I didn't remember.
We're all talking about the exorcism. It that was really so close. And you know what? It was the worst, most poorly done exorcism. Not the girl acting and screaming and all, but geez, Tom Wilkins, whatever the hell his name is, I can't remember. He made a terrible exorcist. He was talking, yeah. A typical Church of England, a non-practicing Church of England Protestant, trying to get the oomph needed for, you know, the Roman ritual of exorcism. He's starting in the middle of prayer. I don't know who wrote that crap. And clearly it wasn't what we were supposed to pay attention to. We were supposed to pay attention to her screaming that she was, that the spirits were what? The ones that were in Judas, in Cain, in
Hitler.
She was
a great actress, though.
Nero, and
she made some ugly faces.
Yeah. I mean, it is a creepy movie. I mean, I enjoyed
it. The woman that played that was the sister in Dexter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. She has some other, she's mm-hmm. in some other, some new series. I think it's a.
She played in White Chicks also.
Her last name is Carpenter or something like that. She was really good. Yeah, and she really did good in that. And I think part of the reason they cast her was because she can contort her body too.
She did all those contortions.
Yeah,
that's what freaked me out though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, at the trial, I'm thinking of the trial in the movie. They had a legal team defending the parents that was separate from the team that was defending the priests. Although I think the church paid for their legal counsel too. I don't know if it was all the same counsel. They made some good points too, you know, but the prosecutor in the movie made some good points too. What I liked about the movie is when Carol Lindley brings in the anthropologist, the woman, the Indian woman, who talks about the state of basically ecstasy, the state of being possessed, and why the ritual would work on someone who believes that they're possessed, right? And it's valid. They believe they're possessed, and they allow the ritual to come into them. They allow themselves to participate in it to as much as they still have the ability in their lower consciousness, and then they're cured. Okay, but it's not it's religious. It's miraculous, but it's also because they believe it, which we talk about this a lot on this show. Is, you know, you can believe something into becoming a fact or a reality, a la Slenderman, a la, you know, the Rake,
get into existence,
Momo. We should do an investigates on all of these internet freaks, you know, these internet creatures and stuff. But seriously, I mean, to the point where we're going to make Slenderman, we're going to believe it so much that two little, you know, 12 and 13 year old girls try to kill another girl to please Slenderman. So, you know, we don't know that people haven't done that across the country. And once you begin to spill.
Yeah, I blame the internet on that, though.
It's,
I mean,
true.
You have young folks reading all that stuff that they don't know the difference between story and reality, because it's, you know, scary and they want to be like their friends and stuff. And they start believing all that crap. I believe
the internet is the
best thing and the worst thing that ever happened to us.
Right. Well, yeah, and we could do without it right now. But what was I going to say?
Yeah, right now they're arguing about chicken sandwiches. So you tell me.
Not everywhere. That's all. That's all they're letting you argue about.
I haven't heard that, Pete.
Chicken sandwiches.
Yeah, something about Popeyes introduced a chicken sandwich and KFC or Wendy's or something is arguing back and forth, and everybody's on the bandwagon, which is better. I mean, it's just, I just saw some of that stuff and I was like, yeah, I got better things to do.
You're not arguing about the Burger King burger that is made from plants. They're not arguing about.
Oh yeah, the Impossible Burger.
No, yeah, and then the meat tax, how they want to tax us for meat, how they want to outlaw meat, how they want to, you know, they want to get rid of the cows and they want us all to eat instead of a dollar McDonald's or whatever burger.
Soybean.
They must buy a $17 hamburger, two patties for $17 Beyond Burger. So there's the internet.
That's a cash grab that I've ever heard of, you know.
It's Al Gore has, guess who the biggest, okay, and here's politics again, folks, sorry, he's the biggest investor in the Beyond Burger, Beyond Sausage. So now everybody's
got, doesn't
now
surprise me.
They're trying to outlaw cows, okay, and everybody on the internet is behind it. It's wonderful. What is that? I mean, we could do an investigation on the internet
We're doing the best we can. We're trying to eat them as quickly as possible.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, they want us to be weak, and they want us to be weak and weird, and they want our men to be milquetoast little, you know, sissy boys, and they want our women to think that they're like, you know, their middle name is Gudrun, you know, and that, you know, there's a picture of them on a, you know, a Teutonic whatever. I mean, you know, there's your internet.
Well,
but
you know,
that's
not going to happen. You know, that's not going to happen over here. I mean, I got too much fire under me. You can tell tonight.
I don't know about that. Okay? I don't know. When it looks like the entire world is in freaking sane, okay? But let's take it back into Supernatural in the substation. I brought up Slender Man because Dean and I did a show about this. Okay, but they even know who invented him, okay? There was a guy, and I don't know his name. He wrote this story about Slender Man. He came out, he said, I'm the guy, creepypasta, back them up. He can go to when he originally posted it, but it got insidious, okay? It blew up, and it blew down on, like, the lower levels of the internet where these people troll and look for stuff, okay? Well, what I'm talking about, there is a line from iRobot when the guy, and this is the movie, I don't claim to know parts of the book, it's been a long time, okay, but where the guy who does Made the Robots tells Will Smith's character, interestingly enough, it's Will Smith in this movie, okay, when does the bitter
moon... That's a pretty good movie, actually.
Yeah, when does the bitter mote of a chain or the bitter mote of electronic code become a soul, okay? You add, you extrapolate on that, and when does Slender Man become real? When everybody is throwing their energy at this thing. They're using the energy of the internet. They're transferring their energy to that energy, to this non-existent entity, and it becomes real. It takes on material form, and all that is magic. Period.
Kind of like Zozo.
Magic. That's magic. Bozo.
Zozo.
Zozo. I saw that episode of that guy doing with Zach Bagans or something running around Zozo. Oh my God. We got to do that one too, folks. Yes, because it needs to be readdressed, okay?
Well, I think we had Darren Evans on the show, the one with the Ouija board Zozo.
Actually, and I'm not going to say anything about it, but between the two of us and whoever might listen to this, I know where the Zozo came from. I know exactly where. I looked into it, and I know where it came from. And it's nothing to do with what this guy thinks it is, okay? It's nothing to do with that. It is very remote. It's a very remote reference, okay, somewhere. And I'll tell y'all off whatever, because I might write about it. But I'm like, oh, okay.
That goes back to Jimmy Page when he put that on Led Zeppelin 3.
That's as far as
it goes. And it goes back farther than that.
it's the obvious, though. That is the obvious. And the farther than that, that they say it goes back to.
Well, it's Crowley, too. It's Crowley, too.
The Dictionnaire Infernal reference to a Zozo in regards to another possession where three demons named themselves. That is not the correct reference. It's something else entirely. And when I, and me being the acolyte of Jimmy Page that I am, it was like, oh, you son of a bitch. I was like, yeah.
It's Crowley. I mean, he got that from Crowley.
Not in this case. He was the acolyte of Crowley. He was Crowley's acolyte. He also was Jimmy's a powerful mage. I don't think he really does it anymore, but after he killed some people, things happened that, you know, that didn't. But no, I found out recently, and I was like, oh, well, relatively recently. I'm like, oh, you smart son. I was like, oh, my God. I knew I loved him for a reason. You know, I'm like, oh, my God. We'll talk about it after.
Wasn't Crowley, he was part of the Illuminati, wasn't he?
Crowley at the time, no, he was not part of the Bavarian Illuminati. Interesting, Bavaria again. No, he in World War II, he formed the, it's AA, and it's something Argentum, okay? It stands for something Argentum, okay. Which was supposed to be, which was requested by the British government as as an answer. Or what do you call it? To basically go head to head with the Illuminati. Crowley formed that. He also helped with cryptology and translating some of the codes and stuff. And then he was.
That I didn't know.
Okay, he was involved in the war effort. He was involved in the World War One war effort too. Okay, but people say he helped the Nazis. No, he didn't. He died in 1947, so he was old and he was getting near death. But he didn't. He helped Churchill. Churchill actually brought him into it. Okay, so that doesn't exonerate him either from the things that he did that were completely out there and whatever. Okay, but Jimmy. Yes, he bought his house. He bought into the whole thelemic, sex magic, tantric, the whole thing. He did all that. Why the hell you think that was so freaking popular? And Crowley himself said, and I say Crowley, the stuff that he was doing up at Boleskine was what put the thing in the net, in the Loch Ness, right on the shores of Loch Ness. They attribute that monster, that quote unquote sea creature, to his magic. That's why that thing is in there. He did a lot of crap up there when he was left alone by himself. And Jimmy, yeah, but in this instance with Zozo and Zozo, no. No. And, you know, I mean, it's not like whatever, but I was like, oh, you're so smart. You gotta get. Look, I'm getting. Oh, you gotta give me my Jimmy moments. Okay. Oh my God. You know. Oh, I remember being at the concert. Oh, he turned around. He looked at me. I got my pictures. Oh.
Well, you know, after everything Jimmy did, you know, unfortunately, they had to give up Gonzo for all that stuff.
Yes, and Robert's kid, and
Robert's kid.
Robert's son was the first, and there were some other things, and he. Yeah. Became a heroin addict. Really, he got a really bad addiction.
There was a lot of collateral damage on all that crap.
You know, I mean, he. I think hubris comes into play. It has to. If you're going to be a magician, a practicing magician, hubris has to come into play. You have to believe that you can do this in order to do it. And when you do things and they begin to happen, and then you become even more like, wow, this is me. And what some of them. Classically, and there are examples, even Crowley himself, don't think of is that the slingshot might come back and hit you. Or if it doesn't hit you and you've done all of your warding and whatever, and you're safe, it's going to hit if it comes back for whatever reason. Somebody stops believing.
It'll come back and hit you on the back end.
It can't exactly take you out. It's going to take nearby, which you say collateral, it's going to take out collateral. And Bonzo, but first it was Carrick, it was Robert's son. And those two men, Plant and Page, have not been 100% ever since then. And for Robert to, you know, to, and then Bonzo sealed the deal. And Robert Plant almost got killed before that. They had a terrible wreck. It seemed to be hitting Robert more than it hit the others. And then it took out the weakest link, which was John. Same thing happened with Keith Richard when he was doing Black Magic. There was collateral damage. I mean, it's like people think that they can do
that.
This
I didn't
thing.
Know either.
Yeah, and he, there's a whole story with him. He and Anita Pallenberg.
We should do one on rock and roll.
We can
the dark
do that.
Side of rock and roll.
We had that guy Matt Swain on, and it was like, this is so
amazing. Oh, yeah. A couple of times. He's awesome.
Club. Yeah, he's awesome. And I missed the one with World War II. I'm so sorry about that. We need to get him back, by the way. I'd like to reschedule him. Yeah, Pete, we should do that because there's a
whole dark side of all that stuff. Even the murders and all that.
Keith Richards and Anita Pallenberg used to go out to the Joshua Tree National Park when they were in California with Graham Parsons. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting story, too, of what happened to him. And then this has something to do with the 27 Club as well. They used to go out there and do rituals, okay? And it was all satanic magic, okay? That's what he was into, and that's what was giving them their push, and that's what their spiel was, that they were there. Their satanic majesties request, goat's head soup, the whole thing. He lived in a house in Sussex, okay? And he and Anita Pallenberg, they did some ritual, and I think it was predicated by him saying he didn't believe something was going to happen or something like that, you know, like just to throw off whatever comment. They go to bed. They come down in the morning, okay, and they're the door of their house, an old English house in Sussex, the door.
Oh, those are those heavy doors.
The entire frame door, okay, had been taken out and turned around inside out. Like the front was facing the inside, seamlessly overnight, and nobody heard a thing. He gave it up right then.
Really?
And there. Yeah. That door, and you can read about it on the internet. He and Anita, I don't know if she recently died, but he gave it up. He paid his price too with heroin addiction. So, you know, but that, yeah, he came down, and after even Brian Jones dying in the pool and all this other stuff didn't stop him. But I think it was like, okay, you don't believe.
Yeah, there's rumors that Brian Jones was taken out.
Mick Jagger, they keep.
Folks don't think. No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
They always point at Mick Jagger, and they wanted Mick Taylor, but it's like, that's a terrible way to get the guy out of a band, you know, is drown him in a pool.
Yeah.
But it's all the 27 Club, that little bunch of people right there. But but anyway, going back to like what we're originally talking about, or what we're talking about as far as the interaction of the ability of the supernatural to become real, whether or not you're healthy or not or whatever, it's all these people feeding this energy into everything that's on there. And that is, people talk about the Illuminati, and they say, oh, it's not real. It is very real. It was formed, they need to look up Jakob Frank, and they can take it from there. It was the original Bavarian Illuminati is the ones that they're referring to as the Illuminati that's running everything, okay? You need to look at, you know, people can just study up on them and read some of the stuff that they're done and to see what they're behind, okay? That Aleister Crowley, the Beast, 666, the man who identified himself as the worst man in the world, the most terrible man in the world, actually set up a magical society to counteract their magic, and then died. And, you know, in 1947, he died. So, you know, I don't know. People say it's not real. It's like, well, from a magical point of view, he took it seriously, you know, enough so. You're talking about the Great Beast that went and, you know, tried to counteract what they were doing and may have eventually killed him. So what I'm saying is, you know, all of the energy and the belief and everything, you know, that we put into it. In the case of Annalise, you're dealing with that, that, and I know it pisses you off, Pete, and I know it does me too. Anytime I see stupidity.
Well, let me clarify something for a second, okay? First of all, what pisses me off is the treatment of that poor girl. Now, you know, I wasn't trying to be argumentative. I'm just very passionate because I just feel that she said she wasn't taken care of properly. Granted, it happened in the 70s, and I understand that too. What just gets my goat is that they just didn't take care of her, and that's my whole thing. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. We all have an opinion and stuff like that. So, but that's why I get heated up over stuff like that. What I was trying to argue with you is just
a lot of people don't know about you is how seriously and how you take it to heart missing children.
I'm pretty passionate about that stuff. Yeah,
you're passionate about children, and you're right. I agree with you. I wish that they had, because it would have lent more veracity to the possession. And if they really had her doing everything they possibly could and it persisted, then I agree. But what I was trying to do is give you the contextualist,
I understand. I understand that. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Right.
I just feel like this. She was just set up for failure is what I see. I mean, she didn't have the opportunity to try to survive.
One more thing. People, even today, even right now, they think Europe is so far ahead. They think Europe is Europe.
As far as like parapsychology and stuff like that.
About not so long after the war, relatively speaking, Bavaria, in a little town in a little hamlet in Bavaria in West Germany. Okay. And Berlin did not finish rebuilding Berlin until the 1980s. Mm-hmm. So people who say Europe is so far advanced to us, it's not. If anyone's ever gone over there and gone, let's just say to London or to England, stay in a hotel where you stand in front of a water basin and you got a hot tap and a cold tap, and they don't come out of the same faucet, you're going to tell me that that's, when I went over there, Hey, you try and brush your face. I mean, you got your cousin in the hotel room with you, and she's brushing her teeth and spitting in the thing, and you got to fill it up and wash your face. So you got to go. You got to take a little cold and a little hot on a rag and keep going back and forth because it's like minus whatever degrees in the hotel room. I'm just saying they're not. They're just older than us, and they've survived more. But there is nothing. That's why people go for the quaint customs, because nothing has changed over there. Nothing ever they're not more advanced than we are. So this is the context of the mindset of the people, even the priest, even the church in that area, because it comes down to the microcosm of the church you're dealing with wherever you are, the manifestation of whatever it is, the local bishop and the local priest. It was just a perfect storm of, mistakes, misapprehensions, belief taken to, the nth degree, where even maybe Jesus would have said, look, you might want to get the doctor, to give him. Yeah, I mean, he might have said, look, they have to pay. I guess they have to pay for whatever sins they committed. And that is a sin, to let your child die like that. But in context, and then taking now my new thing is just I can't believe the things that I've heard from her mouth. OK, and from I'm just floored by it because it's so prescient. And it's immediate. It's right now. It's going on right now. Anyone who's involved in watching what's going on with the Catholic Church and trying to save the church knows that this is like right now. It's contemporary. It's immediate. So I'm just surprised by this. So I we're up against the end here. The takeaway, I guess, that's for me, that's I thoroughly believe in supernatural activity, possession, absolutely. Seeing people, knowing people, Dean, same thing, right? Correct. I mean, I believe in it. I do agree that medical science has a role to play because then they should play it more often because they could have supported this whole thing. Actually, it would have made it 100% more valid or validated it more if, as you say, Pete, they would have put her health first. Then we would have seen what happened because if there was really a miraculous event that was going to happen to her anyway, at least they could have done is keep her comfortable and certainly not let her make her own medical decisions. Like, I don't want to eat no more. You know, that would not happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dean, you can say the same. Your kid, you know, right. It's like, okay, you're going to the hospital. You could be possessed at the hospital with a needle in your arm. Yeah, okay, and that's where I would have. But that's us, you know. That's the way we think like that. You know, I'm not a person, born when her parents must have been born in the early part of the century that had only had the Catholic Church, especially through the war, only had their faith. You know, I'm not that person making that decision. So I don't know. I can only put it contextualized, you know, and say that they relied on their faith and, you know, it their faith didn't fail them, but it caused them to fail her. But was she really possessed? I think yes. I think she was ill and died, but I also think she was possessed as well. So, you know, that's my take. And you're pissed off, Pete.
No, I'm just listening.
No, I know.
I wasn't pissed off to start off with.
No, I'm not saying at us. I'm just saying you're pissed off at the parents and the doctors, which
Of course. I am. You know, and as far as the possession goes, you know, the jury's still out for me. And the only reason being is that I just think that there was probably more things that they could have done before they even went that way. But they ended up going that way. So it's not, you know, my opinion really doesn't matter in this case. I mean, the poor woman's, you know, been dead for how many years now?
So it's a shame, but you know,
it's a sin.
There are some things, you know, there are some things you have to believe without seeing, you know, like,
my feeling is they just didn't do right by her
medically, you know, right? I agree with that, but I also think that that on a supernatural level, it was valid and real, especially based on what I've revisited here. So, and Dean, you heard all about Annalise Michel, because I know you wanted the topic.
Yes.
So I don't know what our next topic investigates. We just went off onto tangents into Zozo. So it's what? Oh, Amityville. Yeah, that's our next one.
Amityville.
So that'll be the second Tuesday, I guess, in September.
Yay.
So, but we'll be back next week again with a roundup. So maybe we might look at something else. So I'm really enjoying these investigations. So, but we're right up against the end, folks. So we just want to tell you that you've been listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network and iHeartRadio Partner. I'm almost losing my voice. Stay tuned. Sit right there. Kathy Bilski comes up next. She's taking a quantum leap. Hi, getting high, Kathy. Stay up and get creeped out at 2 a.m. with Terminus on Dark Ambient Radio. And you can find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Thank you to all our Instagram followers. Follow the darkness wherever we are. And anywhere there's an archive, you can find the United Public Radio Network. So say goodnight, guys. Good night, Pete. Good night, Bernadine.
Night, night.
Good night, y'all.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.